Hey guys, this is Coach Keita Bussey with 180 Firearms Training Podcast, joined today by our guest David Ankeny, Mike Seifert, and Grant Chancellor Madison. Today we are talking about being a match director and what all goes into that. So Mike, I know you wanted to say a little something.
Yeah, no. So we actually, at our podcast, we're happy to announce that DaVinci is going to be sponsoring our podcast. So we just kind of wanted to give a shout out to them. DaVinci Machining, if you are into PCC, check them out. DaVinciMachining.com. It's the most reliable PCC on the market. So yeah, thank you to them.
Thanks, Mike. David, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and just give us your whole spiel?
My whole spiel. Okay. So for me, I've been in USPSA since 2013. Didn't even know it existed until then, which is a crying shame because it's so fun. I am, don't need to use the word former, but I'm a veteran Marine. I was a scout sniper in the Marine Corps. I now do counterterrorism for the government, as a contractor. And that's basically my whole life. That's all I do, really, shoot and work. But as a match director, I run the VA state match. Immortal Arms has been our sponsor since its conception 3 years ago.
Yeah, and by the way, I love that match. I've had a great time the last 3 years. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to it again. But
yeah, we try to make it good.
Yeah. So what's the process, Dave? So, you know, the whole episode today is about Matt being a match director, and you know, you've run that match for the last 3 years. So what is the process if there's somebody out there that's looking to or thinking about being a match director of a major match or something like that? Like what is the first step for you that said, hey, you know, I'm gonna commit to this, and then what do you have to do as a match director? Like, what is your job?
Committing to it, I guess it would be the first step would be do you really want to do it? It's a lot of stress. So I actually did it to bring matches back to Fredericksburg Rod and Gun Club major matches. They hadn't had one. I think 2014 was the last one that they hosted. And I shoot down there a lot. So I just asked them. It's not my home club. So that would be the first step, would be to ask the club if they're willing to host the match. And they agreed to it. The board agreed to it at that club. Then would be the process of filling out the Form C with USPSA. You have to go to the club resources on USPSA.org.
And then out. What goes into that Form C? Is that like your name, the club? And
yeah, it's pretty basic. It's just who the match director is, how many stages you're going to have, possible round count. You always make the round count higher than what it's going to be. I think I put 300. We ended up with 267 this last time, but I put 300. How many stages you're going to have? Again, you could make it a little higher than, you know, one or two higher than what you think you're going to have. Who your match director is going to be, range master. So that's another process. Find out who you, before you fill out the Form C, is getting your range master with a level two, like my match, you don't have to have a certified range master. So, but I used Jim McBurnett for all 3 years that we have had it. Let's see, club, you have to know the club's USPSA designator.
Affiliated.
Yeah, so BA-14 for Fredericksburg. A lot of people just think, oh, it's just Fredericksburg Practical Shooters. No, you can't look that up. It won't show up. It won't come up that way. And that's it. That's really all there. Oh, dates. You need to figure out what dates you're going to have. Yeah. That is all that goes on a Form C.
And then you submit those and then you kind of wait back to hear from them or for approval.
USPSA is pretty fast, actually. They'll approve matches. They don't even care if it conflicts with another date with a club right next door. They'll approve it. I don't know why, but they do.
All right. That's cool. And then you will have. Yeah. So what's your next step after that? So you fill out the forms, right? And then you've committed to it. And then, like, so you said you found a range master. So you got Jim. And then what's your next step as a match director?
Getting it on practice score. So you'll just you know, you're not setting anything up on prep. You're just getting the match. Just like when you go on Area 8, like Area 8s, when you went to register for that, or like when you went to register for mine, you're just getting that on practice score, filling out the dates, how much it's going to cost. Are you going to use their payment system? Are you not going to use their payment system? That's another thing to think about, because their payment system has fees.
It is Stripe.
Yeah, Stripe takes money. and then if somebody withdraws, they don't give you that money back. So the shooter's going to lose money because you can't refund that money. So that's something you need to think about. Do you want to refund the full amount, or are you going to tell them that you're not going to get your fee back? So
now what kind of qualifications does the staff need to have? Do you have to have a certain qualification as a range master or a match director for a level 3 or higher?
So a match director, you don't even have to shoot USPSA to be a match director. You should. It helps with knowing how to set up stages and things like that. There's people that haven't shot a match in a long time that run that are match directors for major matches, and it shows in their matches because they're not quite set up as well. Not that they're bad matches, but you can tell that they're just not as technical or
experience.
The pay like to be a match director? Is it worth it?
The pay? There's no pay at all. you can. Now it depends on your club. If your club is the one that's going to run it and you're just a match director, then you're definitely not going to get any money left over at all. If you budget well and it's a club that allows you to do all the finances, you can walk away with a little bit of money. IRS is going to take some of that because you do have to report it in the end, especially me. I have to report all my finances because of the government. I got to fill out financial disclosure every year.
Working for Big Brother, you know?
Big Brother really watches me. But yeah, you can make a substantial amount, or you can just make a little. I usually break even.
Let me ask you this. Is it about the money for you, or is it because you love
it? No, actually. So if it was about the money, I'll tell you straight up, you know, the belts I buy, they're pretty expensive. I spent $4,000 on the awards this year just for my little state match. So if it was about the money, I would have just gotten plaques for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I buy
those are gorgeous trophies.
Yeah, the main one's 18 karat plated. So it's
oh my goodness.
Wow. It's serious. That's why everybody loves that match. They love to go down and shoot for the belts. Grant, do you have any like special things like that in IPSC over in South Africa? Do you guys get like
cool prizes
like
that? You get a medal basically. I've got a whole bunch just hanging. That's about it. Some of the matches, they'll have like a gun if you win your division, but like those are every 3 years kind of thing. We don't have cool trophies. Kind of money, I guess.
I know around here, man. I mean, the whole talk of the year is that everybody's going down there to win the belts. So I mean, you know, I give Dave a lot of props on those cool trophies. I've seen a cool few things out like in Missouri they do. I've seen in Texas they do swords for one of the matches that they engrave, which is kind of nice. I mean, you know, plaques are cool, but I think that, you know, I think it's a little bit more unique for your match. I mean, you know, I mean that's the staple of Dave's match. Everybody goes there for the belts, right? So I mean, it's just it adds
it's
another level.
It's not a floating trophy, is it?
It literally is like a wrestling belt, like a WWE belt that you see the champions wear. I don't know if we can edit in a screenshot right here, Keita, of the belts. I have a picture. I can but they are very, very
grabbed
cool.
One.
Very you got cool. One there, yeah. David?
They're in my garage. I would have to take like 10 seconds away from the camera to go get them on.
It might almost be worth it. Yeah. But I mean, no, we might be able to insert a picture. I mean, they are very cool though. Yeah. Just add something to it. So yeah, I mean, Dave puts a lot back into his match. You know, so I don't know if some people are just motivated by the money. I feel like if you went to a match and the match director was motivated by making money, I feel like that's not going to be a good match, you know, because normally, I don't know. I feel like if you have the money, you're going to spend most of it at least to put it back into it, to make it the best that it could be. So
Well, if you're just trying to make the most money out of it, you're just trying to churn out things like McDonald's, and it's not really going to be a great match.
Right.
Yeah, and it depends on your club, too. I mean, if your club has all the resources and stuff and you don't have to buy things, obviously you're gonna get money. You're going to stay in the black. I mean, like I said, this year I had bought so much stuff the prior 2 years that I didn't have to put a lot of money into the resources like building walls and things like that. I had to buy a few things. You always got to buy new target sticks.
Interesting. So as a match director,
you got to look at all that in your budget.
You're telling me the club is not, they don't do anything for that. So as a match director, you're responsible if they don't have the fault lines and the walls and all that to put it together. It's not like, hey, I asked the club and they provide all the stuff in order to do that.
Most of the time, no. You're gonna take care of that with the match fees. That's a lot of times why our match fees are so high.
I was in Fredericksburg several years ago, and they didn't have much for props back then. So you must have put a lot of money into getting props.
Yeah, and I put them a lot of money into the props, all the walls over the past 3 years. I don't know, 145 walls, I believe we built for them. And they use them during their local match, too. So, of course, they get shot up. You got to repair them each year when it comes to it, down to it. And that's a little bit more cost. So that's some things you have to take in consideration. Is your club keeping up with their materials? And are you going to have to put money back into that? Or are you just going to be able to go put it on the ground and not worry about it? I do have a lot of clubs around me that support the match. Like Quantico, the Marine Corps, they brought down a lot of equipment to help out because we ran out of steel. They brought down like 12 poppers, two swingers, a bobber, or three swingers, a bobber, and these massive steel walls to hide all these poppers and swingers and stuff behind. So they brought a lot of equipment with them. And for their, not just because it, with their effort, I dedicated a stage that's sponsored by them, and I didn't charge any of the Marine Corps shooters. There was like 13 of them, so none of them had to pay for the match.
Hey, whatever, that seems
fair. I really like the steel walls in front of the movers because that really messes with you when you hear that ding. And I also like taking a steel wall and putting it behind where the swinger comes out. So no matter what happens, you hear a ding.
Yep.
Yeah, we had targets in front of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of fun. A lot of fun. But yeah, so that's nice. Quantico. Yeah. I know you said, I was talking to you when we were down there. I know you said Quantico was a big help. So I guess if the club doesn't have it and does that go into your match fee then? So like, are you thinking about that beforehand? Like, hey, the club, you know, we really need to work on a lot of this. We need a lot of walls. So instead of paying 130, it's going to be 150, or like, what determines the match fee for you?
For me, the first year I did running, I went into the red. So I kind of learned off the first year what I was going to need as far as the match fee. I have kept it the same at 135 every year. I could have went higher. I would have had to go higher this year had people wanted lunch because food costs have gone way up. So the survey that's another thing a match director do. Take a survey, see what people would like to have. Last year, majority of people said they didn't want lunch. I still have to stop for lunch because of the staff. They need a break, but I'm not going to charge you for that lunch now. Whereas before I was charging you and you weren't eating. So I was able to not charge $160 and left it at $135.
So, yeah. What about putting up the staff?
I'm sorry?
What about putting up the staff? Giving them a place to stay, compensating them.
So like, I'll go through the whole staff thing. So soon after you get your stuff on practice score, now it's like, well, okay, I need to get the staff before I open registration. So that's how I do it. I want all my staff before registration opens up to regular competitors. So I send out a survey, post it on Facebook, and it has like their name, what size shirt they want, what days can they work, do they need a hotel or do they not need a hotel? Obviously, you prefer somebody that doesn't need a hotel because that's a major expense. That is the most expensive thing that you're going to have to deal with in being a match director is hotel fees for staff. I had 74 total nights for my staff. I got lucky. It was only $100 this year for the room at a Hampton Inn, no less, which is a pretty good price. So it's come up to about $7,600. That was my most expensive cost. Food would have been higher had I paid for lunch for everybody, but people didn't want that. So,
well, honestly, as a shooter, I would say the only problem I have with lunch is the break time that we get. You know, like I like to keep it rolling because on our last podcast we were talking about how terrible I am after lunch. so the best thing I ever saw with a lunch, Dave, was at Area 7 last year when. I guess it was because of Corona, but I mean, we as a squad stayed on our stage and they had somebody come around on like a quad with like towing like a little quad trailer. It was like the cutest little thing. It was like this big, but it had a couple coolers on it with some drinks and chips. And then they had pre-made sandwiches and they were like, all right, here's your stuff. You got ham, turkey, and you got roast beef, pick a sandwich, grab a bag of chips and grab a drink. Everybody stopped at the same time. It was like 20 minutes. And then we went right back to shooting. I thought that was the best lunch that I've ever had as a shooter. And maybe if you could do something like that as a match director, it would be more efficient for the shooters and people would enjoy that more while they still get to take a break and eat, you know, and your staff gets a break and eat, but nobody has to walk anywhere. So essentially they just kind of hang out on their stage and so you save time that way too, in case you have to walk across the whole thing, you know. But that was just,
I've also seen where they have enough staff that they actually rotate out the staff for lunch. So you never stop shooting.
Have you ever had that, Dave? Have you ever had too much staff?
Never had too much staff. You're usually understaffed.
Yeah. So what happens? What happens with that? What happens if you don't get enough staff members? So that I respect that when you said you don't really open registration to the public until you have your staff members. But like, what happens if you didn't have enough staff? I know that's never happened, but like, what would be it? The match would not happen, right?
It wouldn't be able to happen. I mean, bare minimum. I mean, you need two. On each stage. That's horrible, but that's the bare minimum. And a level two, you also need to have a certified CRO on one per every three stages, I believe it is. It might be two, but you need at least one certified. I go for every two. So for an 11 stage match, I need at six CROs, certified CROs. And then, of course, you're a minimum. You're going to need five, six. Might as well just say six ROs as well. But that's horrible. These two people will be working constantly, and they never get to sit down. So I try to do four. This year it didn't work out that way. I think I had two stages with four, and they were our biggest stages. And you've seen it. I had two that were really large.
I blew one of them. Yeah, I lost me a match. That was great.
Yeah, I blew them both, so don't feel bad.
Now, how do you set up the stages for match flow so that you don't get people backed up waiting on other squads?
So that'll all depend on the range itself and the size of the bays. You try to do, like, my first two stages were up on top of the hill, and then there was a long walk down to stage three. So I could put a short stage on stage two. That way they could get done, and it would take them a little bit. And then they would have to take that time to walk to stage three. So I could put a slightly larger stage on three. My flow wasn't as great this year. I mean, it was still way better than last year. I've gotten better at it, because the stage on four was so big and so wide that it took the ROs a little bit longer to score it. So the people on three were actually finishing and waiting for the people on four to finish. But after that, there was no waits.
Yeah. And so, I mean,
what is your mix of?
Well, I was going to say, like, on paper, did that look good to you? And then, like, is that something?
Yeah,
that
on paper, it looks great.
like, all right, I think this is going to be good. And then you just kind of, whenever the match starts, like, well, we're going to see how it works out. Is that kind of how it goes? Or is it like?
For the most part, yeah. It looks great on paper. You're like, hey, I know it's going to, it should take them, 30 minutes to shoot a 12 round stage with this amount of people. And then they got to make a long walk to a 20 round stage. And it should take them 40 minutes to shoot that. Well, they shot, I actually, it was too easy of a 20 round stage. You remember three. It was pretty fast. It was a fast shot, but it was still technical. You had to hit your right spots, but you could do it really quick. And of course, stage four was so big.
It was very technical. It was a good stage.
Yeah, you had to hit a lot of spots, and it had a swinger to reset. And it just, if I would have made four more rounds on stage three, I think we would have been all right. Or made it a little bit more complicated on stage three, not raise a round count, make it a little bit more complicated. But hindsight, I mean, you really never know how fast somebody can do a stage.
Right.
I kind of look at it.
What is your mix of short, medium, and long courses?
Let's see. How did I do it this year?
This is the big debate in USPSA right now.
Yeah. I had two short. They were after long. One before a long walk and one after a walk. I think I had 5-6 medium and technically 3-4 large, I think it was. Yeah. Yep. So I started with
and
a
how
large.
Do you place them? Okay.
Yeah. That again depends on how the range is shaped. I had a decent size bay on bay one where I could do a medium or a large there. I could have done a small, but I think they would have jumped right into two too fast. And you actually had to walk from 11 to get to one. So I figured having a large stage there wouldn't have been a problem because the people from 11 had to walk up there and they would be done by the time they got there, which pretty much did work out unless they had a bunch of reshoots or somebody stopped the whole flow by calling for the range master and arguing.
Yes, sir.
Do you get that a lot? Are we here with Mike? Do you get that a lot of people arguing stuff?
What was that?
Do you get that a lot of arguing people and
He said, with guys like me out there, do you get a lot of arguing like that?
You know, not you, actually.
I've been getting better.
You kind of take what you get, so you're not so bad.
Yeah, it is what it is.
But we did have a couple people that didn't like anything. And instead of moving out of the way and listening to what the ROs had to say, they could have moved out of the way and they could have continued to shoot the next shooters. And then let the range master handle it. They stood in the middle of the course and wouldn't get out of the way. And then, of course, that's usually when I have to step in. And I'm like, yeah, you're coming with me. And then we'll wait for the range master over here. I had to do that twice this year.
Okay. Do you have many issues with range equipment failures or popper calibration or resetting things and people getting a lot of reshoots because it's not reset properly? How do you handle that?
Pasting
around. So it's a lot of that has a lot to do with your, for me, it takes a week to set up the match. So shoot on Friday. I started setting up on Sunday. I was by myself on Sunday, but then I had a great crew this year, and I'll drop some names that do most of the work. You have Russell Fortney, Matt Schwartz, and Tim Major Hitchcock from the Marine Corps. They did almost all the setup of these stages and the fine tuning. Russell did all our swingers or all our movers. So we bought some different equipment that we did the Manny Stomp pads this year for.
Really, really love those, by the way.
Those things work way better than the regular stomp pads. And it does make for the resetting is faster. We had no reshoots because of the it didn't activate properly, or something like that.
The best part about those is like the it's the same for everybody. When you hit that, when you hit that pedal, that thing is activating, right? Like, well, I shot it and I hit it low, hit the popper low, so it's like it takes a little bit longer to activate. Like, it's, you hit it, it's going. That's why I really like those things. So I like, I usually stomp those and shoot the swinger right away.
I think we ended up with maybe four or five reshoots overall for activators. One guy shot the cable. I mean, just snapped it in half.
That always happens. Like, how are you? How are you getting mics and deltas, but you can shoot this tiny little cable?
Exactly. Yeah, he shot the cable. So, but and they, nobody actually realized it at first, and he finished the stage. And it's like, hey, guys, the bobber's not moving. I was there for that one. We have one where the stick, the dirt, where it was, it, it actually sat in the dirt. But if you sat it toward the middle of the swinger's weight, the dirt would hold on to it. I don't know how, but it did. So you just had to sit it in the front. And I think on staff day, they sat it twice in the front, in the middle. So they had two reshoots there. But that's what staff day is for. Also is to get all those kinks out if something was missed. So I mean, who would have known? You would have had to slide that thing 1 inch. What's that?
So I should shoot staff day then, if that's when I want to get like a little bit of an advantage, because it seems like
you know.
I don't know. Have I been doing this wrong, shooting Sundays all the time now? Like, I should be shooting Thursdays or Fridays. I get like, man,
staff day is a curse. It's a curse. I've never shot a good match on staff day, so I don't know.
Got to give props to Gelnit this year, right? Gelnit, he won the whole thing, and he shot on staff day, and he worked the whole thing. So, you know, got to give Chris a shout out on that. Well, so that was impressive.
There's a kicker to that, though. He just RO'd like a local match. So he wasn't there prior helping set up. So he came on Friday and shot. So
nice and fresh.
So that's something your staff can do. Either they show up and they help you early on, or your staff shows up. Friday, yeah, I mean, and they start shooting.
I don't think you have any room to really mess with them then, because I mean, they're still helping you out, right? So like, he's just, hey, thank
oh,
you.
Oh yeah,
I appreciate your help.
Yeah, I need their help, and I put all the staff up a day early too, so they don't have to worry about driving down that morning and be tired, because some of them are driving, you know, 6 to 8 hours to get to the match. So I put up all the staff starting Thursday night. If you want to come earlier and help, I'll put you in a hotel earlier. So again, that's another cost that you need to think about. It's when people are, if they need a hotel and they're trying to help you, that's more cost for you. But setting up the stages, I mean, you just need a good crew who are setting up these props, and that'll keep you from having any issues with reshoots. We had no popper calibration issues at all. If you get those, We had some of the newer poppers that just sit in the bases. They're like freestanding, I don't know what you call them. Not the hinge base on the big old platforms. Those usually are your problems.
The old, you know what poppers. Those are, Keita? Do you know what those are? Those are the ones with just like the little square steel and then the bolt in the back. And then it just kind of, it sits there. They seem to work there every time. Do you know what
it's
those
are? It's just a knockdown, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like,
yeah, I think that's called, yeah. So do you have staff designated to reset anything that's a mover, so it gets reset the same every time?
Yeah. So usually, like I said, things will happen on Friday when other people are trying to set up in a hurry and the staff don't do it. But definitely during the match, my staff are the only ones that are going to set up the steel and the movers. So that way it's set up exactly the same every time.
Have you heard of the Canadian technique for pasting and resetting, what they have their shooters do? So they designate two shooters to go paste all the targets, so the rest actually get a chance to sit down and relax a little bit, and they rotate through. So only two shooters are resetting at a time, rather than everybody running down at once and not having anything to reset.
Yeah, I think they do that in Europe as well.
Yes. Okay. I have seen that. Yeah. No, I don't know. I'm thinking about that in my head right now, and I'm thinking like stage four.
I would hate that.
literally, you had to tell me, remember, stage four, you wanted me to get these people to start working.
Yeah.
So there was only two people on this squad pasting, and it was taking forever. Stage four was huge. Again, it was so wide. It covered a 50 by 100, I think, is that bay. And I used the entire bay. And only two people were resetting it.
And well, that would be an exception. I mean,
yeah,
as a rule of thumb, it would be two. But if there's a big stage like that, obviously, as many people as possible are going to have to be resetting.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on what you just said to all master directors out there, because I love what you just said, that you had a 50 by 100 bay and you utilized the entire thing. I think that as a master director, you should be utilizing the entire bay of whatever you have, because that, to me, that's what makes a good match. So even if you have like six small bays that you shoot on your local monthly, like, you got to be using all of every one of those bays. And if you have massive bays, you should try to use every one of those. I mean, then you're really going to bring your match to the fullest potential. And the best matches that I always shoot are ones where match directors utilize the entire thing and put stages out there that are like that. So, I mean, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, but then
you does that mean you're of the opinion
who are like, okay, well, now it's just a running sport and it's not a shooting sport. So that's also the other side of that.
Yeah. So what though? But that's a match at that gun club, right? So if the gun club gives you that opportunity, then I think that's what it's like when you go there to shoot. And I think you should just have that in your mind. And I mean, I think that's what makes the match great. And that's what makes them all different. If everybody made the same 25 by 15 stages and just set them in no matter what size bay you had, then it gets kind of, you know, the same thing over and over. I don't know. I feel like the ranges add as much to the match as the stage designs do, right? So, I mean, if you have a good range that gives you a bunch of stuff, then, like, if you have a range with, like, a jungle run through it and you can make something like that, like, I mean, that's just something that's very cool to me. So, you should utilize
it. Mike, are you of the opinion that more bullets equals better match?
I am not. And I was, you know, so, yes and no. I mean, if we're going to go shoot a major, I don't think that you want to be bringing 500 people through a 200 round match. I think that's more like a practice to me. And to me, the biggest thing for, and obviously, yes, I know I shoot PCC and I don't have to reload. And but I feel like the bigger
in
the,
USPSA, you don't have to reload.
Yeah. Okay. Well, even so, I shot the IPSC match in Aruba and I had to reload two times out of that whole match, or three times out of that whole match. So it really wasn't the end of the world. But to me, the bigger stages have just more to think about. And it's a little bit more of a mental challenge for me to have to remember 12 at 25 plus round stages versus, you know, there's two big ones and then a bunch of 12 rounders that I don't even really care about because everybody's going to run in the same way. It's not a matter of round count. It just, to me, seems that the round count being higher always leads towards the stages being more creative. So if you're going to make me paint that brush, then I guess yes, I would say a little bit. But
we got
an
answer out of him.
Hey, you can make great stages that are small round count. And I think, I mean, Keanu and Steven, I think they did a great job on some of those really low round count stages. I thought they were difficult, and you know, they weren't just something that you could blow off mentally, but that's not normally what you find. So
IPSC is a 3-2-1 rule where it's three short, two medium, one long at major matches. So that's kind of what they stick to. So you'll see a lot of short stages basically in major matches, short technical, lots of activator stages. So that's what we're seeing in IPSC. So I don't know, USPSA obviously is not that rigid on the rule set. You can do whatever you want, right?
We have no rule for that.
Okay.
Well, and yeah, their short courses in IPSC are very different from ours. They'll actually have movement in their short courses, where ours, you're usually standing in a box shooting targets that you can see right in front of you, without any walls blocking anything off. That's pretty standard in USPSA. Of course, there are exceptions, but in IPSC, you see some really complicated stuff on their short courses, which actually makes them last longer.
I modeled my two short stages this year were modeled off IPSC or IPSC. They were modeled after theirs, but they were only left or right movement. There was no forward movement. It was just left and right. People love them. I mean, I haven't had any complaints about the stages so far, but most of them were, I would say, between 20 and 26 rounds. So
let me ask a question.
That's a medium stage.
Was one of them stage 10?
Stage 10 was a 14 rounder.
That was a 14 round that you did off an IPSC setup?
Yep. So it was stage
that was
two.
That was my least favorite one of the match. So I'm glad that you was said it was IPSC. I'm glad you said it was IPSC setup. That's great. That makes me feel better.
David, can you clarify for our listeners what defines a short course, a medium course, and a long course?
Rule book time, buddy.
You're going to make me go look up the rules.
I got the definition. I
have to go back through the rules.
Mike, yeah, you just took the class.
Yeah, go ahead,
Mike.
I actually have them on my phone as we speak. But yeah, I believe a short course is 12 rounds or less, right? If I'm correct on that. And there are certain stipulations that go into being a short course. And then medium courses are, I believe, no more than 20 rounds or 24. I'm going to see
with,
if I can
no
come
more
back
than
to me on that one. Sure, hold on.
It also goes with shooting positions as well.
So, by the way, everybody should be downloading, I don't know, you probably can't see this, but the USPSA app on your phone. I literally pulled up the rules and I was able to literally search for this. I already have the definitions of them right here. So like if you're at a match, USPSA app with the rules, not a bad thing, but short courses must not require more than 12 rounds and no more than two shooting locations. Right, that was the difference. The course design must not require more than 8 scoring hits from any single location because of revolvers. Thank you. And single stack. Medium courses must not require more than 20 rounds to complete and no more than 3 shooting locations. And same thing with the 8 rounds. And then long courses obviously are no more than 32 rounds. And doesn't matter how many shooting positions you have. So,
and what is the minimum number of rounds for it to be a legal stage?
Ooh.
You can do one round.
So I saw this at, I believe it was Missouri Fall Classic. They had a stage where it was just two poppers, stand and shoot two poppers. That was it. But it was just for fun. It wasn't a legal stage. So I'm curious what the minimum number of rounds.
It technically is a legal stage as long as they use a large popper.
One round?
Oh, they did.
You can do one round.
Interesting. So that's like a draw.
That's a legal stage.
Quick draw.
Okay. Yeah, it was really fun, actually.
Yeah, I mean, because if you by rule, it can't be more than 12. So you can do one round. You know, I mean, I don't find that fun, but
that could be like
it was actually really fun because it was basically just a quick draw, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good warm up if you're going to
do
it. Like,
one thing I like about IDPA is that they do that warm-up. I wish that USPSA had, like, every IDPA match major that I've ever shot. I don't know if this is, like, what, like, the actual role, but everyone that I've shot personally, like, we always started out with, like, the build drill. So you always did 6, reload 6, and that was everybody's first stage in their first bay. And we all kind of got the gun warmed up a little bit, and then we were able to start shooting our stages. I love that. Like, I wish that we had that in USPSA. I wish that we did a build drill, that, like, as, like, one of our standard stages on every time that we started and everybody did it. Because you could just set a quarter in the target of the – I mean, you could set a target in the corner of the bay. And it doesn't affect the stage. And then once you guys are all finished doing that in every bay, you take that away. But, like, I hate that we get there and sometimes there's no practice bay. And, like, I like warming up. Like, when I go play golf, I hit a bucket of balls before I go play, right? Like, God, I wish there was that when we were shooting USPSA a little bit. I wish there was, like, maybe, like, an extra course setup. Like, God, if you had the room, like, just a crappy little, like, 12, 13-stage course that I could just go over there and run around and shoot my gun to warm up. Like, I think that would be ideal. But yeah.
I was so confused by the name warm-up stage. So when I got there, they said, oh, first we're going to do a warm-up. And I said, oh, you mean in a practice bay? And they said, no, it's a stage set up right next to your stage that you shoot before you shoot your stage. And I said, so it doesn't count for the score? It's just a warm-up?
It does.
And they said, no, it counts for your score.
Right.
I was like, well, that's not a warm-up. That's a stage.
Yeah, I guess. But
it's
everybody,
like, so
does
simple.
It at the same time, right? So to me,
right.
That's, remember last podcast we were talking about how I'm like, well, what happens if they start on the 160-pointer or if I start on 160 and they come through stage 6? We all start on the build drill at the same time. Like, to me, that's great. Like, that, you know, everybody's coming out cold. We're all doing the same shot. So it's not like you get to start on an easier stage than I do. So I think that that's kind of a cool idea. I wish that we did something like that. Like, I feel like we would all be better as shooters throughout the day. Cause, like, man, I get a little nervous coming out always on, like, the first shot. But if I was able to go over there and run my gun for a little bit, or at least shoot 12 shots, 6, reload 6, I would, you know, I feel much better when we actually started shooting, like, a course of fire that wasn't, you know, that was 160 points. So, yeah.
I think most people here in the United States think that for a medium stage, even though by rule can't be more than 20, we like to think between 18 and 26 rounds, that's a medium. By definition, most of my match was a large stage because only 2 of them were under 20 rounds.
Yeah.
So
David, what do you think about having big matches in locations where there are attractions, things that will draw more people to that area? Do you think that's necessary, or is it just a bonus? Do you have anything in your local area that people can go and do if they bring their families that would be a draw?
I think that actually would be a good draw, because they might come earlier, or they can like, well, I can make a vacation out of this as well with the family. I have Washington, D.C., so you have, you know, a lot of museums and stuff in D.C. Fredericksburg itself is a huge Civil War area. Within walking distance, you're with pretty much within 5 battlefields that you can go get some history on. So yeah, having an attraction that's by you could be a huge draw, because people are like, well, hey, you know, I got to spend time with my family, I can't come. Well, now you can come shoot a match one day and then go spend the day in DC or doing some history lessons around some battlefields and stuff.
Bring more international shooters that's a good thing. Well, if it's a case of, well, I'm not going to just go there for a week and shoot a match and fly home, I'm going to go there and do some touring as well afterwards. Yeah,
Dave, just make sure you tell Grant like a year in advance from your match so he can fill out all the paperwork to get here.
As the match director, I've seen a lot of people will put in the match book all the attractions that they can go check out while they're there. And sometimes they'll even contact these places and get group discounts. Do you do anything like that?
I have not. Now I feel bad, because yeah, I could have done that. that's a really
great
idea.
I got to go to the Pentagon.
Oh, you're not going to go there.
When I was there.
Oh, you did get to go there?
Yeah, when I was there teaching a class, I think it was at Fredericksburg, I actually got to go to the Pentagon and take a little tour during a time no one was allowed to be in there.
Okay, well, that's good, because normally they're not letting people in there anymore.
No, they weren't letting people in.
Yeah, it's been pretty locked down here lately.
I had to get a special pass and have a particular person invite me. So it was very cool to actually get to see when nobody's actually allowed to be in there.
Yeah, so Dave, throughout the match, like what are some things that can arise as the match director that go on, or you know, I don't know, some that, like, what is your biggest thing that you have to deal with mostly as a match director, or like, what do you delegate to your range master or somebody like that? Like what is your responsibility and what do you delegate?
So once the match starts, everything's pretty much taken off my shoulders. Everybody falls underneath the range master. So he's in charge. Basically, I will be doing admin stuff. I'll help out the quartermasters. That is really it. You make sure you're keeping track of all your paperwork. You can help the registration people. The more admin type role guys.
Got it.
Range master really isn't going to be dealing with, because even though a quartermaster is considered part of the range officials, the range master really isn't going to bother them. So you stay in charge of them. So when any calls come over for assistance with that, then you can keep them in line.
Got it. So then as the match director, your job as a match director really is setting up the match and planning it out and being the go-between the club and the people that are actually going to be doing the match and setting up the food and all that stuff. But once the match actually starts, it's just the RM is going to hit the shooters now. So, all right.
It's out of your hands at that point. I mean, obviously the range master will confirm with you if there's things wrong with the stage or something like that, and you assist in getting it fixed, but the range master is the one that's in charge.
And the RM actually goes through with you before you guys start shooting on staff day to look at every stage, right? So like you build them and he comes and then you guys go through them together.
Yep. So on Thursday, Jim McBurnett come on Thursday and walk through all the stages, and anything that needs to be changed would be changed. We'd also have the club action pistol chair, whoever's in charge of those bays for that club, they have their own rule. They might have their own set of rules too. So you have to abide by those. So he would walk around with Jim as well, and they would make changes.
Yeah. Nice. So that's why it's out of your hands. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. So on the pre-match walkthrough, Jim now takes responsibility for the stages, and then the club guy takes responsibility that it's all set up for the club. And sweet. Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah, you would like to think that, but I tell you what, I get more stressed once the match actually starts than before.
Why is that? Are you feeling stressed from like just you're hoping people enjoy it, or are you feeling stressed from like you hope it works, or are you like flowing?
Both of those. I mean, it's like you're setting this up to make sure people enjoy it and have, you know, a good time and are challenged by it. If they're not, I mean, yeah, it's pretty stressful making sure you.
Well, I mean, I feel like at that point that it's out of your hands, right? I mean, you've done the best you could. You planned it,
out of your hands. But I mean, it's like it's still your baby. I mean, you still want to make sure it goes well. I mean, I work my butt off all week long, and even during the match.
Yeah, I mean, look,
I do a lot of things that I don't have to.
I am hoping one day to run my own match. I talked to our area director. I talked to Ted a lot. And I'm always like, you know, I really want to do it. I just don't feel like I'm experienced enough yet. Like I feel like I need another few years. And like I have my own stage building kit, my 3D kit, and I've tried to put stages together. I just don't really have the creativity yet of things that I've seen. But I mean, it's a special skill to be able to put the stages together that actually go into it. I know like guys I've talked to like Joe Roberts, and I know he's like, you know, next year you start planning for next year, the day after the match is over, he's like, I'm already thinking of stages.
Right.
And so, like, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, you know, interesting to me to talk to guys like you and talk to guys like Ted, because like one day I want to be doing my own match and I want to make it good for everybody too. But Grant, I mean, do you run matches in South Africa? Like, do you know any MDs in South Africa? How do you, like, do you know what their responsibility is versus, like, what Dave has been talking about? Or is there a difference for IPSC? Like, the match director has more responsibility once the match starts, or?
Yeah, no, I go to the match, I shoot the match, and I go home. I don't want to get involved in any of this. And Dave is now, like, really cemented in that. Like, I don't want to get involved. I just want to go to the match, shoot the match, and then leave. Yeah, I know the guys who have put on the matches, and some of them put on really great stages. Some of the clubs, yeah, it's a case of we'll have a 100-meter bay, but then we'll have a 5-meter course of fire and put a target at like 60 meters. That I don't enjoy as utilizing for the bay. But Dave, I want to ask you, as the match director, when does it get to that point of we need to pull this stage for you? And when, and have you ever actually pulled a stage?
So
like, what has to go wrong?
So usually something that what would go wrong is like targets would end up being hung up improperly afterward. Then you're pulling a stage. This year I did pull a stage prior to 1 week before we set up. I had an alternate already approved. So stage three, it ended up, it looked great on paper, but then we looked at it. It ended up being an RO trap. So there's just no way the RO could get around with the shooter. And if the shooter decided he needed to come back, he was in trouble.
Interesting.
So
you said you have an alternate. So is that something at the beginning of the podcast you had talked about when you fill out the paperwork, you say you're going to have more stages there than you do. Is that something? So when you submit stages, you submitted 14, and then now if one gets thrown out or like you, and now you use that one, so you don't have to go back to Troy and all that. Is that how that works?
Yep. Yeah. So again, with that Form C, you go back in, there's another Form C stage submission. You have to submit all the stages that you're going to use for the match. So I submitted one. I only submitted one extra, and luckily it ended up being the one that would only go in the one that I got rid of.
It's like a change of permit. Like I'm a construction guy, like anybody in construction, that's like, it's like, I got to go down to the town hall and get an update to my permit. Yeah.
And if you liked stage three, you know, that was also an IPSC stage as well.
I did like stage three. Burn that down. Other than I shot one through the wall and I took a mic there, which was my first stage after lunch. And I was super depressed about that. Cause I was like, you know, me and Keita and Grant were talking the day before that match, man. And we were like, man, like, this is what you got to do when you come out for lunch. And I felt so good. I had hit that stage. And then like we're going up to score it, and they're like, "You put one through the wall." I thought they were joking with me. I was like, "No, I did not." Like, and then yeah, it was through the wall. But like that was a I thought that was a great stage.
Was the wall black? Was it?
No, it was
black.
White. It was white. It was white. Okay. Blast. But it was just the 2x4 was kind of on like an angle like this, and the bullet went in, and I didn't call it. You know, I feel like I'm pretty good at calling my dot, but that one I did not. It went through the wall. But that was a great stage.
We'll put white core blast anywhere that we think people are going to shoot the walls.
Yeah. So do you do that in South Africa, Grant? Because like that's how we try to save our walls around here. Because if you don't put like a little piece of like it's core, it's imagine like a stiff cardboard that's like white, and they just put it sticking like that far out from the wall. So people, when they think they're going to shoot the wall, they actually just shoot the coroplast, and then they save the actual wood on the wall.
Yeah, I think we pay a lot less for 2x4s here than you guys do, to be honest. Yeah, so maybe maybe we're not trying to save the walls that much. But if the wall is black, it's considered hardcover. So if you do put a round through it and they can trace it back to a target, it is a mic immediately.
Yeah. No, well, it's a mic through the coroplast too. But I mean, we're just trying to save the props for next year.
You know? All our walls are, no matter what color it is, all our walls are hardcover.
Yeah.
Now I like to put 40 cal rounds through walls, but sometimes they do go through and sometimes they don't necessarily. One time I had a steel popper through a wall, and it made the ding, but it didn't have enough velocity to actually knock it down. Ooh. And that's where the whole calibration thing went, and yeah, that didn't go my way, because obviously. So
yeah, now Grant, you made an interesting point before. You said something along the lines of, I like to go to the match and shoot them and go home. Well, what happens if there was going to be no more shooting in South Africa because nobody wanted to do the work? And would you step up and do the work?
You put me on the spot there.
So
I don't know.
You'd rather, like, that's interesting to me that you took even hesitated. Like, I'd be like, yeah, I'm doing it, because like, I love shooting so much that and you know, it's interesting when you go to a guy like Dave's match or anything on the East Coast. I mean, you see the same people working the match every single time. And it's like, you know, these people are eventually going to get burnt out. And I feel like I love doing this. And I feel like it's kind of my responsibility as a shooter in order to, like, I went and got my RO class. I feel like it's my responsibility to step up and start helping at some of these around my area in order to kind of keep the sport going. So, like, you know, cause guys like Dave are just over there working their ass off. So it's like, you know, I feel like I need to, I step up and do my part, you know, in order to do what we have to do. Nobody's paid here. So it feels like,
yeah, maybe when I'm like 40, and
not competitive. Maybe. When you're not competitive anymore. As you said.
No, that's not what I'm saying. There's still plenty.
When he reaches my age, you know. Yeah.
Well, when I have my fill of all the competition and trying to win, then yeah, maybe. But like, I haven't had my fill yet, so I still want to go and compete. And I was doing a previous sport where I maybe was ruined by getting too involved too quickly, and I'm kind of just a bit cautious dipping that toe into that water, you know.
Yeah, see, that's what I say about kids. That's why I don't have kids yet.
That was off podcast, Mike.
That's another, yeah, that's a Dr. Phil podcast. It's not for this podcast. But.
David, a question I get all the time is, what happens if you just show up at a match? So let's say registration is closed, they missed registration. Can someone email you and still try to get in? Or what if they just show up and don't even contact you?
Meaning what, in what
context? Would they be turned away?
In what context? Like, they showed up like 5 stages late, or they showed up when they weren't?
No.
At the beginning of the day, like gun ready.
At the beginning of the day.
So they showed up on like a Saturday versus a Friday?
I don't like people just showing up, because then you might have a certain number, depending on the day too, a certain amount of the people that you want to shoot, especially Sunday, because you're trying to finish by a certain time, because you got to take down before it gets dark and things like that. So you don't want your squads to be so big. But with that said, I didn't turn anybody away. Most people contacted me and were like, hey, can I shoot this day? You know, I missed registration, didn't find out, or I'm going to be in town. I'm like, yeah, show up. You know, I'm not going to turn you down. I did have some squads. Normally there were 12 shooters for a squad. I actually did have a couple that were 16, because I didn't want to turn anybody away. I mean,
okay, what if they didn't contact you? What if they didn't contact you?
Well, I probably wouldn't have known.
Well, if they walk up to registration and say, I want to shoot this match, what? And then, like, you know, you had no pre-knowledge. So
Major Hitchhack would have probably thought that they contacted me and he let them in.
Bad advice. Do not just show up to a major unannounced. You should have
don't just do that.
Dave is a very nice guy.
I will say that most majors aren't going to allow you to do that. I would say 75% of them aren't going to let you do that at all.
Okay, so if an international person was there and they just happened to say, okay, well, I want to shoot this match and I'm here, can I come tomorrow? You'll let them in.
I will let you in. I will let you in.
Well, I might even let them in. If you're international, you're here.
I'll let anybody. Go. Like I said, I'll let anybody in. I mean, and I even go so far as, like, normally we, like, with our refund policy, most matches within a month of the match, there's no refunds at all. Military people, if they couldn't make it, I refund them their entire money right up to the day of the match. A lot of people won't do that. So I think I'm pretty fair when it comes to registering and dropping out. So that's something a match director has to take in consideration, because yeah, people get angry, very angry when you won't let them shoot the match, or you don't give them their money back, hey, or something like
that. That's their problem, man. If you don't sign up, you don't sign up. You know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people complain about that, but like, I feel like everybody had the same opportunity, except for if you're trying to shoot Area 7, because for some reason that could be exclusive. And I feel like if you go online when you're supposed to and look at what date the sign up starts and put it in your calendar. And if you miss that, then there's nobody to blame but yourself, in my opinion.
That's true. I mean, but I don't get a lot of people. I think I had maybe 10 people that ended up saying that they wanted to shoot the match and they didn't get in. They didn't see it, or they just decided, oh, hey, I'm in town, can I shoot it? It was only like 10 people. Hey, come on out, have fun. I don't care.
So David, do you end up with like a waiting list of people, or do you have like a title for this is how many competitors I'm having?
I should have a cutoff, but I don't. I don't close registration until a week before. And so I have 11 squads. On the first day, it's 10 per, and then it's 12 and 12. But like I said, I add people. So many people drop out and another person signs up. I actually don't fill up, because I make it so big as far as how many people can actually sign up. But for a state match, I had 368 people sign up this year, which is a lot for a state match.
It's because of the belts, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. I think like everyone would have a waiting list like for an 18 karat gold belt.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, it's the talk of the year. It's the talk of the year. And everybody at locals, they were like, dude, I'm taking my belt this year. It's like everybody, I'm telling you, it's a big draw.
Yeah, the memes are hilarious.
So, David, obviously you're a glutton for punishment. There must be something rewarding about this for you. Can you sum it up for us, what you enjoy about this? Give us your closing points.
I think the satisfaction that I was able to put on something that everybody enjoyed is good enough for me. It is a lot of punishment. I was in the Marine Corps. You know, we're not the brightest. We're not the brightest people in the world. So. We like punishment.
Please, sir, can I have another?
Yeah, pretty much. And every year after it's done, I go, I'm not doing this again. I'm gonna be crazy. That's crazy. I'm not doing this again. And then within a couple of days, I'm like, oh, all right, let's get this match going. And I start planning for the next one down to. I have a lot of stages already set up, so I just got to pick which ones I want to use and how many targets I need to buy and things like that. And then I keep the same sponsorship package. So that's so simple. I don't have to worry about, I just need to change the dates on the form. So it's not so brutal. This year was so easy. I started in April and I even had my hardcover targets done by June.
Yeah,
they were already made.
So if you had somebody like myself who's an aspiring MD, you know, like what's one piece of advice, like the most important thing that you could tell them?
Start early. Keep accurate notes. That's pretty much it. I mean, like if you were to go, you said you were going to put on a match in October of next year, I would tell you already have your Form C in. And be calling a hotel That's your first two things. Call in a hotel and make sure you can block off enough rooms for your staff.
Valid.
Because you know, hotels... this question. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
This question might put us over a little bit, but I think it's really important and we missed it during the show. What about collecting sponsorships for the match, having match sponsors?
So that's very difficult, especially now. We start calling people, calling companies or emailing companies.
Yeah, who though? You just call the number on the website and say, hey, can I speak to somebody in an hour? Or like, that's it? Like,
I mean, obviously, you have all the people that you've seen before at all your major matches, like Glock, Springfield, like when you're going for a firearm or something like that, Walther. I'll do Bass Pro. I try to do so many local firearm stores in Virginia is what my goal. And my title sponsor is Immortal Arms. You always give your title sponsor the opportunity to come back. You don't go off and find another one. That's very inconsiderate and rude in the world of match directing. So if Immortal Arms, I will always ask them to come back. If they don't, then I'll go find another one.
What do you ask? What do you ask of them? What do you ask of them? Like when you call, like say, hey, I'm Dave Ankeny. I'm running the VA state match. I was wondering if you wanted to be a sponsor. Like, what do you ask of them to give? Like, what is their?
Depending on the what they want to do, how they want to put out their name. So if they want to put banners up on stages, so if they want to be like a stage sponsor. From my match, a stage sponsor was $1,000. They got two slots. Obviously, they can hang their. I'll allow them to hang their banner up, not just on the stage, but anywhere. You want to put it up at the food area, you can put up the food area. You can bring a truck and do vending. So I have that vendor area. Have you seen that? Pretty large area at Fredericksburg. Let's see what else they get. All their little advertisements in the match book. They get mentioned at the match brief. But I you can go all the way down as far as like a local store at in Fredericksburg. Hey, you don't have a lot of money, you're a small store, hey, be our water sponsor.
Yeah.
Buy 50 cases of water. You know,
it's really interesting.
Okay, so you have like a whole bunch of tiers, you know, you can like give like a whole bunch of options.
You get your title sponsor, your division sponsors, your stage sponsors. I have what I call sponsor's choice. Match contributor, they're just throwing money at you and you mention them. Sponsor's choice is usually like the water. They choose what they want to do. I'll sponsor your water, or I'll sponsor I'll buy you some paint or something.
What's your interest level? So how many companies do you call? Like, do you think it's like 50% that you call that say yes? Or I mean, like, because to me it just seems like that's what a random thing to get out.
You want to go off this year? This year I contacted like 60 some and I had 5.
Wow. Gotcha. Okay. So anybody that's going to be an MD, just know that you're going to hear no a lot more than yes. So prepare yourself.
Yes. Well, especially right now, this is a rough time for sponsorship period. I mean, I had Vortex. I mean, that's a big company, but I didn't even get an optic from them.
Yeah. So like, is it more like regional? Like Kita, do you find that you get more like the Vortexes out West and all that, but you don't get any like East Coast companies? And like, Dave, did you see that more East Coast companies were into being sponsors than like West Coast companies? Yep. They try to keep it around. So like, I know Immortobot is in Virginia, right? He's there.
They're Virginia. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I imagine they have more motivation to be sponsors around
match. Yeah. We're also just a state match too. So you got to think you're not going to get a lot for a state match.
Hey, a major is a major, you know, I don't know.
I mean, my belts. The belts are their sponsor. I mean, I get a massive discount. So like I said, I spent $4,000 on these belts. I would have spent close to $8,000 without them giving me the big discount that they do each year. Man. So big shout out to Undisputed Belts.
Yeah. I want to say a big public shout out to all the sponsors that do all the matches. Cause I mean, you know, as a shooter, I know that we all really appreciate everything that you guys do. And part of the reason that we're able to go do what we do and have fun is because of the sponsors and people like Dave that kind of put it together, you know? So thank you, Dave. And thank you to all the sponsors
for
help with these matches.
Yeah. So,
Yeah.
And yeah, thanks.
And
Dave,
thank you to all the range officers.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Can't do it without staff.
Everybody that works. Yeah. I mean, like I said, the same people work the same matches, and it's just like, it's insane that every single match. I mean, these guys go for 3 or 4 days and they take time away from their family so we can go out there and have fun. I mean, what a thing. So thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming on, David.
Oh, we really
appreciate your input.
Yeah.
I like it. Dave.
Thanks, Dave. This was really interesting. I must definitely hit you up when I'm there in country. I need to go try maybe win one of those belts because I think it'll just be awesome war hanger.
Oh yeah.
Yes, sir.
Better than your bunker background.
If you win, you have to do an interview. So I do make the winners do interviews.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, we don't do that here. We don't like you don't do give speeches. You take your stuff and you go away. You learn very humble. So that'll be
it's really fast. I just ask you. You should just ask what you think of the what you thought of the match. And
well, if you won it, you thought it was awesome. So
yeah, right, right, exactly. When you got that big first place belt on your shoulder, life is okay.
I mean, you could step up. You could step up there and go full on Conor McGregor or something, and really, talk it up like they do. I mean,
love it.
That's your opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you all you guys for coming on. And if you're digging these videos, like and subscribe, and we'll keep putting them out there.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys.
Appreciate you. Have a good weekend.
Cool. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Have a good one.